Welcome back to the Bitcoin Layer. I'm Nick Bhatia. Today we welcome back our friend, Checkmate. Check, great to see you.
G'day, Nick. It's good to be back on.
Check visits us from Australia, and he brings the best on-chain analysis in the game. Check, let's start with what's going on in volatility. I know that a lot of your thesis around where the Bitcoin price is going is based in the volatility market, which is derived from options pricing. So what are you seeing? Walk us through implied vol.
Yeah, it's been an interesting process of Bitcoin, really, since the all-time high. You know, I think the last time we spoke would have been around July, I think, because I was in the US. And that was, we were right in the midst of CHOP solidation, right? And that was kind of the theme, and the market was just going nowhere. People are getting frustrated. And in many ways, we've all had the eye on this election, right? And I think we're talking, what, a day away from it actually taking place. So, you know, the market's kind of been waiting for what that certainty looks like. And what's been really interesting is that this CHOP solidation process has really changed a lot of coins. They've changed hands. We've got almost a different holder base. We've still got all the classic hodlers, but there's been a bunch of people who bought for the ETF run-up. They've distributed some of those coins. The hodlers have come in and bought them. It's been a process of moving those coins back to the stronger hands. Now, at the same time, everyone's had the eye on this election, and this is obviously going to be a point of volatility. And I've been saying to my subscribers that markets can sell off on good news and they can rally on bad news. We see this all the time. Generally speaking, what they really, really don't like is uncertainty, right? So in terms of, generally speaking, the markets will be fairly kind of cautious about putting too much risk on when they have no idea what the world looks like. And given kind of how contentious this election has been and just this whole process of it, it makes sense. A lot of people are just sitting on the sidelines waiting for, like, they're not sure where to allocate their capital yet. Now, there's another class of investors or traders who are certainly in that speculation type, right? And when you've got an event like this, this is the kind of environment where they come in, they go, hey, I can actually throw some money down on whatever it is. Bitcoin just happens to be a highly liquid 24/7, right? It's one of the few markets that will be trading throughout the entire process. And there's also a bit of a flavor of the Trump trade baked into it because, you know, Trump and RFK both spoke at the Bitcoin conference. There's obviously a favorable versus a not so favorable party towards this entire industry. So I think a lot of people are starting to pile in. And we've seen actually over the last couple of days, lots of speculators are coming in and putting on positions, both in futures, but also increasingly in options. And really the last 18 months has been an extraordinary growth in the options space. It's now as big or just about as big as the futures market in terms of open interest. So we're seeing there's enough depth and liquidity for speculators to come in. And really, when you've got this uncertain type of outcome, it could go up, it could go down significantly, it could go both. Options are actually an ideal instrument because you can essentially limit your risk, buy a call, buy a put. And you know, if the market goes in either direction, one of those sides will expire worthless, the other one won't. So it does make sense. But there's also people who want to hedge their risk, right? They want to hedge their portfolio, so they buy some put options, and that's purely just an insurance play. So we are seeing implied volatility starting to tick up, but it does look like the election's kind of that event that's probably going to kick off whatever happens next.
Yes, and we are recording this on Monday, November 4th. We'll be airing it on Tuesday, November 5th, as early as we can. Get it out before the election. People can understand this building volatility position. And building vol is a result of options demand. Options demand is a result of people wanting to place binary bets. So check, there's a lot to unpack here. Let's start first with the idea of stronger hands. And we, at the Bitcoin Layer, we like to make sure that we're delivering the maximum signal possible. So in our quantitative report, mean median mode that we put out, the first on-chain metric that we introduce is realized price. We introduce MVRV, and we try to teach people when they're looking at Bitcoin, they have to understand the internals. Part of the internals are how is the health of the mining ecosystem, meaning are miners joining or leaving the system, right? And we can derive that from difficulty, of course. But with realized price, it's a behavioral analysis of what people are doing. So relate the ETF build to realized price to the stronger hands thesis that you have.
Absolutely. And these are all key components, right? And that's what I love about on-chain DAOs. We can take different cross-sections. So MVRV, it really is the right place to start because it's the average profit or loss that investors hold. And ultimately, right, you can be the most hardcore Bitcoiner of all time. Every time you check your portfolio value, that's you confirming your MVRV. If you're in a nice fat green number, that means you've got a high MVRV. You're feeling good about the world, right? And even if you're very up on your position and the market sells off, and that green portfolio number becomes less green, it doesn't feel great. And that's ultimately why MVRV is useful, because we all anchor to our value, right? However we want to do that. Yes, you can price it in Bitcoin, but at the same time, we still do live in that world where it's very, very hard for most people to completely decouple and say, well, my MVRV is one because I'm just one Bitcoin is one Bitcoin, right? Most people aren't there. And that's okay. It's actually important to recognize that that's the truth. So with MVRV, we've seen the market really cool off. Now, there's two ways that MVRV can cool off. And that's really what CHOP Solidation's been about. The first one is the price can pull back, which literally just reduces everybody's unrealized profit. The other way is you can chop around sideways and the price can, you know, more or less go nowhere. But what happens is coins take profit and the realized price starts to climb. Now, if you think about what this means, you're actually kind of bringing up the baseline or your mean reversion model. If it's realized price, you're kind of softening the distance between price, which is going sideways, and realized price, which is climbing. Now, why is this really important? Because when a coin is locking in a profit, it means it was acquired at a lower cost basis and it's been spent at a higher one. It's the market acclimatizing to a new altitude, because for every hodler that takes profit, and the reality is hodlers do take profit, the beautiful thing about on-chain data is you can't spoof it. And if an old coin that was bought in 2017 moves up here in 2024 at a higher price, you can't lie about that. The chain sees it. We see the UTXOs getting destroyed. So what we can see is these people are, you know, for every seller, there's a buyer. Newton's third law, right? So you're getting the market acclimatized to this 60,000, 70,000, 50,000 price range. And we've been acclimatizing up here for 7 odd months. And really justifying that $1 trillion market cap. We tried it twice in 2021 and we got rejected pretty hard. Here we are in 2024, we've acclimatized to a trillion plus market cap. There's new holders who've come in. I mean, I personally, I like to say, am I seeing myself in the data? And I feel comfortable now at 60K. In fact, if it was to trade down to 55, I would be saying, hey, that's actually a good price. Like, it feels cheap relative to what I'm used to, right? That used to be the thousands, used to be the 10,000s, and slowly and surely the market acclimatizes higher. So MVRV is the right place to start. You know, we've also got with the ETFs, there's all these extra dynamics. We've got ETFs, which are a component about 10, 20% of the market. We've got futures markets as well, which some traders are putting on buy long the ETF, short the futures on the CME. You mentioned miners. I mean, I've been watching my block lock. I think hash rate briefly tagged like 800 exahash and it's now pulled back to the low 700s. Like, we're actually seeing volatility in the mining market as well. So really, really interesting that you can take these cross sections and see where all these different entities are over time.
With today's macro landscape, many people are worried that they are not saving enough for retirement. Now you can grow your retirement savings with a tax-advantaged Bitcoin IRA using Unchained. The Unchained IRA is the only solution that allows you to hold your own private keys in an IRA vehicle. Right now, Unchained is running an amazing deal for you guys where you can get started with their IRA for no setup fees and no fees for the first year. You can roll over traditional IRAs or other 401k accounts into this new Unchained IRA, and they can help you set up everything. Go to unchained.com/TBL and experience true ownership over your retirement. Don't risk your Bitcoin security. Do you have Bitcoin private keys stored on paper? Make sure you convert those keys to titanium with Stampseed. Stampseed has this really cool DIY kit that allows you to hammer in your seed phrase into these small titanium plates that are fire resistant and damage resistant. This kit is designed by titanium metal workers that have been working in stamping metal for over 14 years, and your words are deeply stamped, not just a shallow dot. So make sure you check out stampseed.com today and use code TBL for 15% off of your order. There's so many bullish indicators when you're in the bull cycle that you can see within the data. And the same is the case on the other side, which is why it's important to know or to have comfort in where you are in the cycle. And that's what you're talking about. As realized price increases, the market is more and more comfortable where we actually see pullbacks as a discount instead of inducing fear. So the first chart we're showing people is a spike in implied vol. That is what we are seeing as people, you know, demand more options. And the second chart that I want to show people here is open interest, and open interest is going up. So just quickly talk about the bulk of this volume is Deribit and CME here. So talk about what's going on in open interest and relate that to the build in implied vol.
Yeah, so options are really, I mean, they are, the, in my view, they're going to be the killer asset or the killer use case for Wall Street when it comes to Bitcoin, because when these options go live on the ETFs, which, you know, is probably coming in the next couple of months, it allows volatility capture strategies, it allows hedging strategies, and this is a point I've been making quite a bit recently. Without deep and liquid options markets, big money can't allocate big money. So in order to put on a multi-billion dollar position, if you're a big capital manager, you also need to be able to hedge that risk. If you can't hedge that risk effectively, you can't allocate in the first place. So it actually limits how much capital can flow in. So there's a lot of people who talk about, you know, oh, these options are going to change the volatility profile, and they're going to suppress the price. And the answer is yes, that will happen to some degree. There will be volatility capture strategies as these ETFs and options start to have a bit more interplay. But at the same time, without them, you can't have the big money come in. So this growth in open interest for options particularly. Now, I would still put Deribit, which is like still 95-odd% dominance of the market. Deribit, I would put in the bucket of an offshore or a kind of a crypto native exchange in the same bucket as like the Binances and the Bybits. The CME is really kind of the regulated entity here. When these options go live on the ETFs, I'd put them also in the CME bucket. So it is harder for big US institutions to go on Deribit. It's not a likely outcome, but you will still get a bit of a snapshot of the crypto native environment, right? And, you know, trading funds and, you know, hedge funds and things like that. So we've kind of got this splitting as well of where the open interest is coming from. But overall, options are the preferred instrument to bet on volatility. And after 7 months of chopping sideways, you'll see this in price, you'll see it in all sorts of metrics. The market kind of gets lulled to sleep. It gets used to a low vol environment. Usually that means we're headed into a much higher volatility environment, right? It's one of those things where it's like, you know, you compress the spring, it coils up, and then it has to move. This is just the way that markets work. And we've been lulled to sleep to an extent. And really, this is the first significant spike we've seen in implied volatility, really since the yen carry trade back in early August. And it's been compressing ever since. So this is kind of that first burst of, hey, we might be on the verge of, yeah, it makes sense, right? You need some kind of an event and a catalyst. It makes sense the election's going to be that spark that lights the next flame.
And I want to just note to the viewer that we have not even hit on-chain itself. I mean, we've discussed Realized and MVRV, of course. But in terms of the charts here, and when we're talking about volatility and options, this is not an on-chain phenomenon. These are off-chain phenomena. This is the traditional financial system that we're talking about. I want to hit one more chart on the volatility theme, which is the intraday price performance chart that you have with your CHOP solidation. That's Checkmate's nickname here for this summer of consolidation here as we chop up and down, hence the term. And then with this chart, you can see that the range has been now continuously broken over the past several trading sessions. So walk us through and of course, this is going to be realized volatility, not implied volatility, which is what we've been talking about thus far. So talk to us about the realized side, what you're seeing in the intraday swings. What does it mean? What are the comparables? And and of course we have the yen carry trade several weeks ago on the chart, but that didn't last for that long. So bring this home for us.
Yeah, so that's the thing, right? When we talk about volatility, there's implied volatility, which is basically the premium. If you think about options as an insurance contract, the people who are writing or selling those options, the insurance company is the right analogy for them. If the market looks like it's going to be volatile, then there's a higher likelihood they're going to have to pay out that insurance, right? And the option buyer will be in the money. So they demand a higher premium. So when we talk about implied volatility, think of it as the premium that the insurance companies are asking for because the risk that the market's going to whip around quite a lot is high. Now, that doesn't necessarily have to match the realized volatility, because the realized volatility is what the market sees and how it's actually trading, the measured values. And obviously, options traders are looking at the measured value and then trying to put an implication on it, right, and price things up. So that's really what that kind of connection there is. I just want to quickly touch, you mentioned on the on-chain, how do you connect like the on-chain with the off-chain or the derivative side? There's a metric actually called sell-side risk ratio, which I've got a chart on my website, which is, it shows it is the same chart. This is purely on-chain data. It looks exactly the same as implied volatility. So sell-side risk ratio is looking at the amount of realized profit and realized loss, all the coins moving at a large delta from when they were acquired. So just to put that in perspective, people who bought their coins back at $5,000, they're going to create a large sell-side risk ratio when they take profit, because the delta between $5,000 and $70,000 is very large. People who bought their coins yesterday will have a very small impact because the delta is very small. Now, the way to think about this, sell-side risk ratio, when it's very low, it means all the coins that are moving came from a very similar cost basis to where we currently are. So it kind of means that coins are just like jostling around, very small stuff. It's found equilibrium. All the big profit taking and all the big capitulation losses, they've happened already. So people are kind of ready for the next move. And that metric is also very low at the same time as implied volatility. So both the on-chain world and the off-chain world speak the same language. And they're saying that the market it's digested the ETF rally from March, and it's ready to do something else. Now, you're talking about the intraday price chart. In my recent piece called Like a Moth to a Flame, we started seeing in the last like 2 or 3 weeks, various metrics, whether it's price and just the scale of the swings, it was kind of chopping around, not doing very much. And then it started to get bigger. We got bigger swings to the upside, bigger swings to the downside, more realized volatility. We also saw open interest start chopping around. So like there'd be a big build in open interest, bunch of shorts would get squeezed, it would drop. Then you have a bunch of people go long and then it would get squeezed. So we're starting to get more volatility across many metrics. And this is really speaking to that kind of day trader, speculator type coming into the market, putting on levered bets. Lots of people go long, they get blown up and it goes to the downside. Then they go, oh, it's going to zero. I know, I'll go short, and they get blown up and it goes to the upside. So a lot of people get into that like intraday chop. And you know, at the end of the day, a large sector of the market, they just like to gamble on stuff. That's just like, a big reason about how markets work is it's all about the speculators and the investors. And these things, there's like a pendulum. It swings between investor dominant, which is really like the hodler cohorts, what chop solidation does. And now we're starting to swing back towards the speculators, where the hodlers have built their position, sell side risk ratio is down, they've kind of ready for the next move. Speculators start to come in, creates the volatility, we swing up or down in a big way. People then, the investors then react and they capitulate if they go lower, or they take profits as we go higher. So you kind of got this pendulum swinging back towards the speculators, which really is the kind of sign that vol is going to pick up soon.
The speculators are back. You love to hear it, because the Bitcoin price, it can't experience the extreme volatility without the manic depressive, the, you know, the crazy 24/7 crypto native traders that are degenerates. And the degenerates are, they're actually a part of this market, and you can see when they are here and when they're not. And so are the degens coming back, Chuck? Is that kind of what you're saying here?
Well, in a very small way. So okay. One thing that's been very interesting about 2023 and 24, we aside from the ETF peak, we haven't seen the kind of a rampant degeneracy that we saw in 2021. The market is much more structured, much more, I don't know how you describe it. It feels more sophisticated. So yes, there is the degenerates, but actually what, in my view, I think a lot of the degenerates have moved over to like the, you know, the meme coins of the world. What we are still, there's always going to be the speculators. And you could put things like fast money hedge funds and these lot in there as well, because they're essentially there, they're trading the price. They're not buying the asset for the 100-year long hold. They're buying it for the next price swing. So that you would put them in that same bucket. There are more of them than the crypto natives who are just, you know, betting for the sake of betting, because I think they've got other instruments. So it's definitely a more sophisticated crowd. And actually, I listened to a fascinating podcast recently with David Dredge, who's a real one of these volatility guys, understands volatility, trades on tail risk. And he had a really interesting quote, which is like, you know, I'm a volatility guy. I get asked about Bitcoin all the time. He's more interested in Bitcoin now that these options are starting to form on the ETFs. And his logic was, the challenge with Bitcoin today is that most people who hold it have earned their income, put their own cash on the table, and bought the asset. Their willingness to go down with the ship is very high, right? There's a lot of hodlers who will take this thing to zero. He goes, what I'm more interested in is when the likes of the Goldman Sachs and the big banks who are betting someone else's money and they have a bailout behind them, I want to see when they blow up. And this is the thing with I think as the options go live, we will probably have more periods of chop solidation, right? I think that's going to become a more normal part of the market structure, because that's where those volatility capture strategies come in. And those vols capture strategies, they work until they don't. And then when Bitcoin moves, and it generally is volatile both on the upside and the downside, whereas in equities, they're only volatile on the downside. Anytime it's grinding higher, the VIX actually falls. Bitcoin has a positive volatility on both the left and the right tail. So when it moves, it's going to move in a really, really big way. And there'll be a lot of option sellers who are on the wrong side of that. That creates that margin call effect. And when these big funds start blowing up, that's the kind of vol that he wants to capture, those left and right tails. So I thought that was a really interesting dynamic, potentially alluding to the idea that we may have more volatility, maybe less frequently, but more volatility when the big money comes in, because there's bigger players who get things wrong.
And vol sellers that get squeezed lead to positively convex moves. And bond investors will be familiar with that dynamic, because when you own a 30-year bond, for example, and you have 60 cash flows over the life of that bond, and the largest cash flow is in the future, when the discount rate goes down, the speed at which your coupon present value goes up increases as rates go down more. And that creates a positive convexity in fixed income. In Bitcoin, what Chuck is describing is a scenario in which you have big players that are selling calls in this environment, selling calls and doing a vol capture strategy. So when Checkmate says Goldman Sachs will do a vol capture strategy, what he's saying is that they'll sell calls and collect the premium, hoping that volatility doesn't explode. And with their call selling actually contributing to the suppression of volatility and to keep the price narrow. But it works until it doesn't. You remember the VIX fund that blew up? If you know, just short VIX permanently at a certain, you know, point just doesn't work anymore, and then the whole thing explodes. Talk about a convex move. Just look at the, you know, that trade. And the fund that, you know, or the VIX when that fund blew up, that's the type of dynamic that Chuck is referring to. So how would you react to that?
No, I think that's exactly right. And I think what's so interesting about Bitcoin is, and is going to make it a very interesting asset moving forward, it is just the raw fixed supply nature of it. And that is that when the investors, the hodlers, they will slowly chip away and just take coins off the table. And a lot of these investors, they put them away and they never see the light of day again, right? And if they do, it's a small chunk of their portfolio. So for the most, as coins just continue to get pulled off market, this kind of stable base forms, and then there's just no one left to sell. And the market has to go somewhere else. And I know for me, right, there have been hodlers who have been selling up in this range. I can see it. It's measurable. It's not insignificant. It is a meaningful amount. But there's also periods where they just stop, right? They've done their profit taking. I'm good. I'm sitting tight. For me, 70K isn't my price. For someone who bought in 2013, 70K may be the price for their 5%. They want to go and buy a house or whatever it is. For me, it's not it. So for me, until the price goes substantially higher, it's not my station. I'm not getting off the train. So the more and more people who are in that bucket, you get this kind of changing of hands. The coins move around. The lower the price goes, the further a hodler's dollar goes, and they could buy more. And then what happens is the thing just has to gap somewhere else because there are no sellers at 70 and 75 and 80. And it has to go somewhere else and then re-find equilibrium. So I think it's quite interesting that Bitcoin has this like grassroots origin story. It's got the growth story. It's got the sound money story. It's got the competing with gold story. It's got the volatility. It's got a unique spread, right? If you're a Wall Street trader or an investor, this is a unique menu. And they haven't seen this kind of thing in a very, very long time, or almost never. You're kind of watching the monetization of a new form of sound money and a store of value. There's a hardcore hodler base in there. It's volatile. People are going to come in. They're going to have speculators. You're going to have investors. You're going to have pension funds. It's a really, really new asset class. I think that's what makes it so exciting moving forward.
And I suggest that people, first of all, go subscribe to Chek's newsletter. We'll put the link to that in our show notes. But definitely subscribe to the Bitcoin Layer. We have hundreds of YouTube videos now to go through what this asset class is all about. If you are somebody that's new to Bitcoin, we named our company after Bitcoin because this is the technology that's going to be around. If you look at the way that Checkmate conducts his analysis, it's Bitcoin centric. It's Bitcoin blockchain derived data that he uses. And this is the technology that really the financial system is starting to build on top of. All of these products, these ETFs, it brings us to our next chart with the ETF inflows. All of these products are based off of this one network. Before we go to the ETF flow chart, I want to complete the thought because I realize I didn't when it comes to positive convexity. What happens when Goldman Sachs sells a bunch of calls and the market starts to go above their strike prices? They have to do what? They have to buy to cover. And so when prices are rising and then you introduce a short covering, which is buy to cover, you put buying on top of buying. And that is how you get a positively convex move and how explosive upside volatility can happen above certain strike prices because of a vol capture strategy more broadly. Now, that can't last forever because you'll reach a certain point, like you said, where the hodler will look at the MVRV and realize that the profitability is too great and then hit the sell, and that will create its own behavior in the market. But the immediacy of what happens in a vol capture short covering scenario is something that I just wanted to specify. Let's move to the ETF chart. Massive inflows. What are you seeing here? And what is the takeaway?
Yeah, the ETFs have seen tremendous inflows. I mean, I think it was like 2.2 billion last week. And there was, you know, I think it was about 4.2 billion over the span of 3 weeks. So really quite significant inflows. Now, sticking with this kind of, and this is what I love about Bitcoin analysis, because you have to look at all these different market segments. And we have such amazing transparent data on all of it. So you have to look at the ETF inflows, but remember that someone can buy the spot, right? This is the cash and carry trade. You buy spot or the ETF and you short the future. Now, this is only possible when the futures are trading at a premium to spot. And that alone is telling you that there is a net bid side in the futures market. So there's people buying in the futures market. There's people who buy the ETF. They then short the future. And they're essentially capturing that premium, and they can roll that every quarter or whatever their timeline is. So this is a part of what's been going on over this. This kind of like it is a volatility capture strategy in a way, but it's slightly different to how options work. Now, in recent weeks, I see on Twitter all the time, people are looking at, oh, look, ETF inflow, price not up, what's going on? And the reality is there's two components here. One, there is sometimes a balancing force of a short in the CME futures. But the other thing that's really important to remember is that the ETFs are only 5 to 10% of any one day in terms of the size of the market. Sometimes they get to 20%, but generally speaking, the existing markets, the spot market, right? The Binances of the world, they remain the largest component of spot. So yes, there are people who are buying the ETF and shorting the future, but a dollar of inflow into the ETF doesn't necessarily mean that the price has to go up because there's so many other components. Now, what we've seen over the last couple of weeks is when I compare the CME open interest and I compare the ETF inflows, again, these aren't perfect numbers, but we're just trying to say, like, are we seeing an equivalent increase in CME open interest to the ETF inflows, which would suggest there's a decent chunk of people buying the ETF, selling the future. At the moment, we've actually seen the ETFs have blown out above the CME open interest. That's telling us that there is true, just people are buying the ETF. There's no short, there's just buying the ETF. So it's a more directional, people are actually coming in and buying spot now, right? And then obviously people can say, hey, why isn't the price higher? It's like because the markets are more dynamic, right? Things is this part of the challenge of markets as these things aren't one-to-one, but we are seeing coins coming out of the spot market into the ETFs and held by an investor. So, you know, we're watching all these very, very interesting dynamics playing out. But I mean, I think these inflows have been fairly substantial and fairly meaningful. You know, people are buying in the lead up to the election. And I think that following that, once there's a bit of certainty, we will probably see more capital feel comfortable to allocate because that uncertainty of what the future holds will disappear. And I've been saying this a long time. Again, I'm an Australian. I have no dog in the race. The only party that you guys are not going to be voting in is a fiscally responsible one. And the reason I own Bitcoin is because the fiscal irresponsibility. So at the end of the day, you know, is there an asset other than Bitcoin that I want to hold through this? Not really. So, you know, I can probably see that once the dust settles, I suspect the market will work this out and it will probably be a net positive for Bitcoin moving forward.
Well, we agree. And when we think about the dynamic of ETF money coming in and coins getting tucked away, because that's really what's happening here. We know that ETFs will have inflows and outflows, but on the net, over time, the vehicles will grow and therefore the amount of Bitcoin tucked away at these custodians will grow. That means that when we get these escape events from your chop solidation ranges or, you know, whatever trend lines we have, and you escape from there, that you can have moves that are much like previous Bitcoin moves. And that's the message that I want to drive home today, is that if speculators are arriving, are building up the open interest, and the price isn't going crazy, guess what? That just means there's a seller on the other side. Every one of those sellers is exposed to a large, positively convex move. Basically, they're exposed to the upside. And if they don't have their own hedge, which is a purchased call, then they're naked short Bitcoin. One of the most dangerous things any financial speculator could ever imagine to do. It can be very profitable if it's timed perfectly. Otherwise, it can, you know, destroy books. So, Chuck, I'll let you have the closing thoughts here. We only are, you know, hours away from the election, but let's not, anchor our analysis in who's going to win, but rather, what are you seeing in the market and what are your takeaways here once we get past the event?
Yeah, so in the lead up to and following, there are a lot of speculators coming in the market. This is like, you know, open interest is all-time high in futures. Options are ripping to the upside. It looks like we're on the cusp of whatever the next move looks like it can be. And I've been talking to my subscribers and saying, look, guys, it could go up and down. It could literally go both directions because we could get these wild swings as people have to cover, as you mentioned, in both directions. I can very easily imagine that we're all sitting there watching, the votes getting counted, and it looks like one swing state's going one way, and then suddenly it goes the other way. And you can imagine that, and this is going to be Bitcoin largely because it's 24/7, but I suspect all markets will be swinging around based on how these results start to come through. There's then, as the dust settles, right, whatever the outcome looks like. So we're on the cusp of some pretty wild volatility. I think seatbelts are going to be required, but for the hodlers in the audience, for the traders, first and foremost, Godspeed. This is going to be a pretty wild ride. For the hodlers in the audience, I've been using the equivalent of, and I'm not predicting that this is how it's going to go down, but if we look at March 2020, right, on the 1st of March 2020, this is before we had a global shutdown and economic chaos and all that, Bitcoin price was $8,500. We had a global shutdown. We had a virus everywhere. Crazy time. 2 months later, Bitcoin price was $8,600, right, on its way to 64. So that's kind of the framework. Again, not necessarily predicting that there's a March 2020 style sell-off, but if you get these wild swings up and down, Bitcoin's going to be just fine, right? If you close your eyes, again, chop solidation was close your eyes for 6 months, we'll be at the same price, bulls and bears will be liquidated. This is going to be like chop solidation on steroids, where you're going to get probably some pretty wild swings in both directions, but the net outcome is that it's going to move coins from one holder to another. And the market will then find its level, which is that, Bitcoin's a $1.3 trillion asset. It's justified that for 7 months now. It's on its way to a higher altitude, right? Takes time, takes volatility, but, just sit tight and enjoy the ride.
Check, tell people where they can find your excellent work online, please.
Yeah, so you'll find the newsletter over at checkonchain.com. We also have a charting website, which is currently going through a bit of a refresh, so we're rebuilding that in the background. But pretty much every chart that you see in my analysis, we've got it all available for free. So it really gives people tools to kind of follow up and keep track of things. We're really, our thesis was a lot of people come into Bitcoin, they think they're a trader, they realize they're not a trader, they're a hodler, but they want to understand why the market does what it does, and that helps people hodl. And that's the feedback we get. We get people say, hey, it's much easier to hodl because I understand why the market's doing what it's doing, even if I'm not trading it. It's just good to understand the mechanics. It's a learning journey. I'm always learning, right? It's a new journey every week. So that's why you'll find me.
Well, it's excellent writing. We appreciate your analysis as always, and we hope that you'll join us again soon.
Thanks, Nick. Thanks for having me on. Cheers.
All right, guys. We'll catch you next time.